what the significance of the Kabbalah? And then why won't we say very simply, my Dehava Hava? Listen, Moshe Rabbeinu appeared on Hasina some 3,300 years ago, and he accepted the Torah. That's it. So, is it merely a commemoration? It's, you know, July 4th on the American calendar. You know, they declared independence. So we mark it each year. Or is the matter deeper than that? Right, the Machshava people are already chomping at the bit, ready to go on that question. So first, let's take a look. A very interesting Gemara about Metzia on Daf Pei Dalet Amud Aleph. It's a Gemara that's always fascinated me. The Gemara relates that Rabbi Yochanan was a very handsome man. Extremely so. And the Gemara tells us that Yom Echad Avakosochi Rabbi Yochanan Biyardino. One day he went down to the Jordan River and he was taking a swim in the Jordan. Chaz near Rish Lakish, and from his perch swimming in the Jordan, he observed Rish Lakish. Now Rish Lakish at this time was a mafia don. I don't know if he was a killer, but a robber he certainly was, at least that much. And Rabbi Yochanan observed him, v'shorval yadin abasri. And he long jumped. The Jordan River is narrow in some places, and he long jumped over it, which was quite a significant athletic feat. And Rabbi Yochanan was impressed with his athleticism. So, Amalei, Chel Cholai Reis. So, such energy and strength that the Rebbeinu Shalom gave you, imagine if you focused that on learning. So, as Rish Lakish, I told you, was a mafia don. So, the world of Rabbi Smedrish and Rabbi Yochanan wasn't exactly on his scope. I mean, Tosis has a shine that maybe he was once a yeshiva man before he became a Tzitzurimina. Tam and Tosis has a shayla. Tosis has a shayla that maybe he was a yeshiva man and then he became a mafioso and then he came back again. That's the Rabbi Tam's shita. So Amalei, so he said to Rabbi Yochanan, Shufrech Lenoshi. Your looks, you can interpret it two ways. Rashi seems to interpret it to mean, listen, what does a guy like you need such good looks for? You know, the Rebbe Shlomo, if he was going to give out good looks, he should have given it to a woman. What are you going to do with good looks? Or you could say that he meant to say that, listen, you know, you could be a ladies' man with such good looks, but what is a Rosh Shiva cloistered inside the yeshiva? You know, that's not his. He needs a good head, and that's it, you know. But what are good looks going to do for you and your lifestyle? So basically, you know, he told Rav Shlokish, listen, you know, the Rebbeinu Shlomo's broch is wasted. Chel chayir, you should have used it for Torah. So Rav Shlokish told him, listen, in your life you have the same kasha on yourself. The Rebbeinu Shlomo's broch is wasted. What do you need good looks for? So Amalei, he says, he had this broch, you have the loch ha-chaisi, the Shapira minoi. So he knew what Rabbi Yochanan understood and speak his language after that comment. So he told him, listen, I have a sister who is even better looking than I am. If you come back and join my yeshiva, you can marry her. So, Kibbalalai, he accepted upon himself that he was going to come join the yeshiva. Boy, the medal, lasuye money. So now we had it was on the wrong side of the Jordan. He wanted to jump back over to the other side, long jump back, to get his clothes. Well, they motzi, harder. And he couldn't do it. Ikraya, he learned the Mishnah, Chumash, Visnayan, and the Mishnayas, Vishavi Gavarab. And he made him into an Adam Gadol, the Rish Lakish of Shas. So the Shaila is, what does the Gemara tell me, this part of the story? Well, the Motzi Hoda, what is that relevant to me? You know, who cares? I mean, the point of the story seems to be, listen, he had great abilities. And Rabbi Yochanan said, if you focused your abilities, you know, a person with such tremendous energy upon learning, you know, we talk about the frail people that succeed in learning, you know, despite their frailties. Well, Yosha was extremely frail, and Afal Pikeni was unusually successful in learning. You know, but it's much easier. Reb Chaim Sholem Zatzal Mashrer, you know, knew him well, was an extremely powerful person, physically, a very powerful person. So you don't have such a kasha that a person like him had the energy and the strength to learn 20 hours a day. You know, he had phenomenal physique. He was a tremendous gibur physically. So Rabbi Yochanan said to him, you have such tremendous strength. Imagine if you harnessed all of that energy to learning, what could come of you? So that's the crux of the story. Why is it important to me that he couldn't jump back over? Who cares? You know, whether it happened, it didn't happen, so Chazal told me it happened, but why am I concerned if it happened or not? And even if it happened, because Chazal told me it happened, so it happened. Why do I need to know it? What does that add to my understanding of the story? So the Marsha comes along, Rabbi Yisai, and the Marsha tells us something phenomenal there. Phenomenal. Marsha says, Chel Cholai Raisa, he gives another yet spin to the Gemara, Chel Cholai Raisa. Not only did he have tremendous energy, but he told him you're using your energy for the wrong purposes. So Rotz Loma, Chel Cholai, Koyach Zeshel Yetzahara, Loi Raisa. If you're so afflicted with the Yetzahara, you use your energies for the wrong things, you should learn. And what will happen? You should just Asik Boy Mateshes Chel Cholai. It'll weaken your drive to do the wrong things you're not supposed to do. And as the Gemara concludes, remember, the Marsha says, this is only a Kabbalah Ba'alma. He hadn't learned one halacha from Rabbi Yochanan yet. He didn't learn a Pasuk Chumash. He didn't learn the Mishnah Me'emasah yet. He didn't stop. He hadn't seen the building of the yeshiva yet. He didn't touch the Gemara. All that happened was he was Mekabel upon himself. He accepted upon himself that he's going to learn the yeshiva to learn. And obviously the Kabbalah, whatever the motivation, but the Kabbalah was sincere. He intended to follow through. That Chazal being made, then we see he followed through. And that's the reason that he couldn't jump back over the river. The Torah nikreis al-shem zeh toshia, because it's mateshes koichah shalom, which weakens a person. In other words, his focus to succeed athletically, a person needs tremendous focus. An athlete that's not focused, that's distracted, how do you say simple? Send them home with Toynish, right? You know. Therefore, all the misadventures of the athletes off the field, they have a shaykhus. Because if he doesn't show up focused, he's tremendous focus. He has great physical gifts, but they have to focus them tremendously to succeed. Rish Lakish's focus was no longer, he couldn't muster it the same way, at least at this point. Maybe later he could manage both. But now that he put this tremendous focus now on his ruchnius, he couldn't muster the same focus for his athletics. And he just realized, there's no way I can't jump back over this river. It's not going to happen. I can't do it. From what? Torah Mateshes Koichah Shalom. It's just the Kabbalah. He accepted upon himself to learn. He did not actually learn one ice yet. It's not that the actual learning was mekadesh him and elevated him and changed him. He underwent the transformation just with the Kabbalah Sater. Kabbalah to learn. Didn't see the Mishmerish yet. Didn't blow the dust off the Gemara yet. But he was a new person. He was transformed. In Yeshiva and Volozhin, they used to say, Amaisa. And Shimon Volozhin stood for 90 years, from 1804 to 1894, till the Tsarist government closed the town. And they say Torah was unabated for 90 years straight, 24 hours a day. There were always people learning. Reb Chaim Volozhin was the founder of the yeshiva, and he was the first Rishon. I think he lived till about 1821, if I recall correctly, something like that. So we said that when he was, during the years he was Rosh Yeshiva of the yeshiva, one day there was a bocher who was eating lunch. And all of a sudden, he got this tremendous cheshek to devote himself for years to learning. So he said he's dedicating the next 5 years of his life to learning. I guess with a newfound asmada, a newfound diligence. And he ran off from the meal without reciting Birchas Hamazon. And he ran to the Beis Medrash to start to learn. I guess he benched ultimately in the Beis Medrash, but he didn't bench in the mokum that he ate. So Rav Chaim Volozhin, the Tzal, said the following. If he asked me, l'halocha, if he was allowed to leave without benching, Absolutely not. But if he had waited to bench, I don't know that he would have been able to learn the 5 years. Right now was the Kabbalah, and it was strong. He implemented, he acted upon it, he carried it out. So he was able to succeed with that Kabbalah. But if he'd waited, who knows what would have been, if he would have made it or not. So when we talk about Kabbalah Satorah is a certain focus, a certain commitment. You know, today we live in a world, a very professional world. You know, I drive around, I pass the shul today of immigrants. So, in that shul, if you need to fix the lights, paint the walls, you don't have to hire anybody. They have, you know, someone that's associated with them, they come, this, all the Balei Melacha in this immigrant community, they're members of the shul. So whatever needs to be, this guy's a painter, this guy's a carpenter, a plumber. So I was thinking back, you know, 50 years ago, that's the way it was by us in the shul. You know, this guy was a shoemaker, this guy was a plumber, etc. You know, today we live in a very professional world. Now, what did we succeed in our professions? In gaining entry to our professions? It's not easy. There's a lot of work that goes into it. But we had, as we start life, a highly focused vision of that which we want to do. And we know the steps that are necessary for it. And we know that the consequences are serious. Failure is not an option. So, under those circumstances, we're driven. And we get someplace, we succeed. Oh, learning is not something we come, yeah, learned a little bit today, you come, learn tomorrow, you know. But it's wandering around. It's aimless. A person is dedicated, he has a goal, he has a vision of where he wants to get to. So then he gets someplace. The time is productive because it's focused. Rabbi Yochanan, the Kabbalah was a focus of the Ruchnius. It was focused. They say that a man came to the Vilna Gaon once, and he was a businessman in Vilna. Well, he was Kabbalah in the Torah. It was a good Yehudah. And he said, Rebbe, I'm not happy with my accomplishments and learning. So the Vilna Gaon said to him, I want to ask you something else first. He said, are you happy with your business? So he says, Rebbe, I can tell you, I wouldn't mind if I made more money than I'm making. You know. So the Vilna Gaon says, let's take a look at this. He says, you spend 10 hours a day in your business, and you tell me you're not happy with the results. So you're spending 2 hours a day in your learning, so why do you expect to be any happier with the results? Now, it doesn't mean we can change the mix, but it means the focus that we have, how significant that focus is, to be oriented towards, goal-oriented, to accomplishing something, and being driven to accomplish. That's the Kabbalah. That's what's all important, is the Kabbalah. This is not a question of professions. In my youth, my childhood, there was a Yid in East New York, his name was Ramosha Biederman, Zoycha Tzadik Levrocha. He was a presser, I believe. I think that was his profession. He was a presser. And next door to the Mizrahi Shul where I davened, there was another shul, the Auschwitz Street Shul. And downstairs in Auschwitz Street Shul, there was a minyan early Shabbos morning of great lomdim that had learned at the European yeshivas. And this Ramosha Biederman was a presser, he wasn't a Rosh Shiva, he used to say shir for chevra there every Shabbos morning. They learned for hours and hours on Shabbos. I remember my father, Lama Shalom, told me, he says, regular balabatim didn't attend the shir. You couldn't understand what it was to poshut, but not on the level. If you hadn't learned, you know, a very sophisticated lomdus in the European yeshivas, you couldn't understand it. It was a very, very high level. So I remember as a child, the Balabatim in East New York said about him, he works 8 hours a day, and he learns more every day that he works. Not a matter of professions. Who was the one, the most prolific writer that we have in the Achronim, in Ashas, printed in Ashas? The most prolific writer. Rashash is the most prolific writer. There's almost not a page in Shas. They say there's one or two or something. There's almost not a page in Shas without commentary of the Rashash. And he has the serious attention of the Lomdish world. He made a tremendous impact on learning. The Rashash was a banker. The Rashash was not a Roshiva, he wasn't a Rov. He was a banker. He was a wealthy banker in Dumna. And this is besides his bank, running a business, a big business, he spent his time learning. Ad kedei kach, that he's the most prolific writer that we have on Shas. It's not a question of career. Shas already made this clear. This is the pshat, you know, you have the Gemara in Tainus, the Gemara with Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan. That Ulfa and Rabbi Yochanan were two yeshiva-like. And they learned under very difficult conditions of poverty. And it just was Bo'omayim HaNofesh. They just couldn't, you know, hack it anymore. So they decided, less braver, they have to go and, you know, get involved in some other business to support themselves. And the rest of the time, they'll learn. So they're on the way to where they were going to get involved in business, that they sat down. And they were near a bridge, or under a bridge. So Rabbi Yochanan looks up, and he hears the Malachim saying, we should throw the bridge down on these guys because they're leaving the Beis Medrash. So he turns to Ilfa and he says, Ilfa, did you see or hear anything? So he says, no, I didn't hear a thing. So Rabbi Yochanan understood that the message was meant for him and wasn't meant for Ilfa. That's why Ilfa was not privy to hear the Malachim speaking. So Rabbi Yochanan got the message that he's supposed to go back. So why? Because Rabbi Yochanan was supposed to become the Rosh Hashiva. So Mameila, listen, he had to endure all the difficulty, the Ayyadat Chak, you know, for the good of Klal Yisrael. So he went back and he continued learning under the difficult regimen in which he lived. Ilfa went on and he became involved in business. Then it says, Ilfa came back and he went up in the mast of a ship and he said, if anyone asks me a question that I can't answer, I'll jump into the yam, I'll jump into the river. Chazal are telling us that he was accomplished in learning like any other person, any other great Talmud Chacham. So Chazal are telling us that, you know, when he reached a point in life that he couldn't support himself anymore, that's, you know, that he had to look, you know, to be Isaac in Derech Eretz. But Avraham Pekin, so he was the classic one that was great in Derech Eretz. So we've had that in all of our history. You know, my Shmerz al Zangazint always points to. My Shmer was never in the Klei Kodesh. I don't know, maybe a few days he substituted in his life at a school. I think that's about it, you know. One of his Chaverim was a Manal of a Yeshiva. But he had his own personal reasons he didn't want to be in the Klei Kodesh. But he was a Yid. Throughout his, you know, working career, he was a working person, he was a printer. But he was always extremely kovayitim l'tayr. So he pointed out once, there's a Rashi in this week's parsha, it's Per Gimel Posseg Lamed Ches in Bamidbar. So it says, V'chaynim lifnei ha-mishkan keino zrocha was on the eastern side, v'moshe Aaron Abonov. So Rashi says, "Kotzat Tanchuma, the Toiv LeTzadik, Toiv LeShchena." If you live near the environs of a tzadik, you benefit from it. Because which Degel was on the eastern side of the Mishkan was Degel Machna Yehuda. So it was Yehuda, Yisocha, and Zvulun. And Rashi, the Medrash cites Psukim that these were the three greatest Shvatim in Torah. And for what reason? Because everyone had the opportunity to learn from Moshe Rabbeinu in the Midbar. There was no business in the Midbar, so you came and you heard Moshe Rabbeinu say shit. I mean, we have Baruch Hashem, many of we were zeichet to have good rebbeim, but Moshe Rabbeinu we didn't have. You know, imagine you come say every day, you come to and Moshe Rabbeinu is saying the shir. It's pretty heady stuff. So everyone had the opportunity to learn Mamash Moshe Mipi HaGvura. And nevertheless, who were the greatest? The ones that lived, Moshe Rabbeinu lived on the eastern side of the Mishkan. So when he wasn't saying Shir, what was he doing? He was learning. So the Shvatim that lived on that side of the Mishkan saw him more regularly than anyone else. And they saw his tremendous commitment to learning. And this was the difference, despite the fact that we're all under the tutelage of Moshe Rabbeinu, that these became the greatest Shvatim historically in Torah. The Doradoros. And among them, this is what Masher always points out. You know, Zvulun has the schar that he's a machzik Torah, he supports Yisofa. He says, but don't misunderstand Zvulun. Zvulun was accomplished in Torah too. As Rashi says, he was from the three greatest Shvatim in Torah. He also had the schar of being machzik Torah. Rabbi Yitzchok Elchanan, the Kovner Rav, was the greatest Pesach in the last part of the 19th century, died in 1896. So with his youth, he endured great privation to be able to learn. Later, he was well established. He was the Rav of the most prominent shtetl in all of Europe, the capital of Lithuania, and he was well developed and took good care of him. You know, he did not suffer privation being the Rav of Kovna. He had a brother who lived in Eretz Yisrael. It's hard enough to be a Ben Torah in the 21st century in Eretz Yisrael. You can imagine what it was in the 19th century to be a Ben Torah in Eretz Yisrael. It was hard to be a Balabos in Eretz Yisrael in the 19th century. A Ben Torah in Eretz Yisrael. So his brother lived under extreme privation. Yitzchok Elchanan was comfortable, but he wasn't rich. So he couldn't, you know, dump tons of money on his brother, but he helped to support him, that he should be able to survive. So he says it's not only the need of the chesed shalot, you have to be machzik Torah and have to have a chesed to help his brother. He says, but I gained something from it, which I no longer have in my life. He says, in my youth, I had the schus, the schar of Torah yideat chak, because I learned in a time of great stress financially. I was very stressed. So that's a tremendous schus to be moisa nefesh under those circumstances for Torah. Now in the Rav of Kovna, he said, you know, I live comfortably. It's a felt minished ice. There's nothing missing in my life. But my brother lives under great privation. So that I'm machzikim, I have a schus in his mesiras nefesh for learning. That's a Torah. I don't have that Torah anymore that he has. So now I share in that schus by being machzikim. It's obvious, listen. The Yisachar who basically was a porush from the world, and he sat and learned. So he obviously did not live, you know, under the same circumstances as Zvulun. It wasn't so easy. So Zvulun, but there was a different level, you know, of schus there was in his Torah. So that Zvulun shared it, but Zvulun was extremely accomplished in his own right. Was from the very, very greatest Shvatim and Klal Yisrael. So that's what we have to keep in mind, Rabbi Yisrael. The issue is not what we do in life. There's all different professions, and if we do them in an honest fashion, they're ohov and v'nechmad by the Rabbeinu Shalom. And it considers Rabbi Yisrael Salanter writes that we're oisik b'mitzvah when we're oisik in our profession, that we found some of our families. It's very cool. It says it's oisik b'mitzvah. And at that time it says the potter from Talmud Torah, because I using the mitzvah is potter min mitzvah. But after all of that, we have to be kaveid in the Torah. We have to do it with a sense of Kabbalah Satara. That we have a goal, and we're going to work towards that goal and accomplish. I want to be Menachem Oval today. An old yidid of mine from my childhood. So his older brother tells me that he has chava. Who was in the professional world. Now he's probably his late 60s, and he's retired. He said in his retirement, he said he made a siyum on Yerushalmi already. The issue was not professional, he said. The issue was Kabbalah Satara. If we're committed to to accomplishing. Each one of us, according to our own abilities and our own level, but we can all accomplish. So that is practically, in a practical sense, what's Kabbalah's term. But the Shaila is, I asked at the beginning, what do we need? Do we need Kabbalah's term, or just might the Hava? It's a recollection of what was. What is this Kabbalah's term? So the word Shabbos is very fascinating. The word Shabbos says the following. Going to read on the first day of Shavuos. So the simple pshat in the pasuk is that they gathered at the foot of the mountain. That's Pesach Tisahor. However, if you examine the word Tachtis carefully, in this simple interpretation of the pasuk, there's an element that's missing. Tachas does not mean at the foot of. Tachas means under something else. That's what the word tachas means. So because of this, Omer Rav Avdimi Bar Chama Bar Chasa Lamed Kshakofa Kodesh Baruch Hu Aleihem Esahar Kigigas. They were literally under the mountain, not at the foot of the mountain. The Rabbeinu Shalom held the mountain over them as if you were holding a barrel over them. V'Omer Lahem. And there's a question, this is literal or this is implied, this was implicit in the circumstances, the varied interpretations. If you accept the terrifying, and if not, the mountain will come down upon you and it's all over. Simply the meaning is, what did we say, Rabbi Yisrael, Bereishis? Bereishis, Boro, Lofim, Esa, Shamayim, Esa, Oret. So what did Rashi tell us Bereishis means? Rashis is Mishul HaTorah Shanikra Rashis, Mishul Yisrael Shanikra Rashis. That this is the voracious of the world. But upon this stands the world. Like the Medrash says in Parshas Noso, that the world was on shaky grounds for the first 26 generations until Kabbalah's Torah, because the world stands on Torah Avodah Milas Chasodah. And there was no Torah. Torah we didn't have in those 26 years. Rav Chaim Volozhin in his Nefesh HaChaim and Shar Dalet quotes many Chazal and on the same pasuk, many places in Chazal. There's a pasuk in Yirmiyah which states, "Em lo brisi yomon v'laylof, not from my kamer and day and night, chuko shemayim v'aras l'samti, then the natural world wouldn't have been created." And Chazal tell us that the world stands upon Talmud Torah. Rav Chaim Volozhin cites a Chazal and says it's literal, that if there would be a cessation of Talmud Torah for 1 second at any point in the world history, the world would cease to exist. The world stands on Torah. So in effect, the Rabbeinu Shalom told us, listen, he had us over the barrel and under the barrel. He told us, listen, either you accept the Torah, if you don't accept the Torah, then there's no Bria. It's all over. Chukos Shamayim V'aretz or something. So, under those circumstances, you can't exactly say no. So, we said yes. So, Omar of Acha Bar Yaakov, Mikan Medor Rabbah L'Reisa. Based on this, what Rav Avdimi taught us, then, you know, when the Rabbeinu Shalom comes to bring us Ladin, we have a shtickle teretz, we have a little bit of a teretz for him. Like we all know, both Lahavdil and the secular law and the Jewish law, a contract which is entered into under duress is invalid. So if I come with a gun and I say, listen, if you don't sign over your house to me, your history, so you sign over your house. So the contract is invalid. If you have the temerity to accomplish, if you have the temerity to go to court and say, listen, I was coerced, the guy pulled a gun on me. Of course, they'll be moved out of the country. The halacha will also be moved out of the country.
So what happened to Toluo Vizavin?
That's Toluo Vizavin, you have to pay. Toluo Vizavin is nothing.
Okay.
You are correct. But Toluo Vizavin, if I come to force a guy to pay, it's a shayla, but the threat of Sakonas Nefoshes maybe is different. But if I use anything short of Sakonas Nefoshes, then certainly the deal is not a deal. Be that as it may. So coercion invalidates a deal. You can't have a contract entered into under coercion. So he says, well, when the Rabbi Shalom schlepped them for Mishpat, they should have told the Rabbi Shalom, listen, you know, we're going to plea bargain this case because there's a flaw in the prosecution. You know, this was, you know, why are we obligated? By this contract. No, the contract is flawed because there was an element of coercion to it. So, Omar Rabba, so Rabba responded to that, that was historically fun. But Afal Pikein Hodor Kiblu B'me'achashverish, that they ultimately accepted them upon themselves in the time of Achashverish. Tichsiv Kimu V'Kiblu Ayehudim. Now, what is Kimu V'Kiblu? I mean, the phrase itself is really backwards. The phrase should be Kiblu V'Kimu. Right? First you Makabal, and then you do, then you fulfill. What do you mean, Kimu, I fulfilled the envy of a Kiblu, and then I was Makabal? It's backwards. Perhaps that's the deal. There's different ways to look at the deal. So he explained, Kimu Masha Kiblu Kvar. Kimu also has the sense to certify something, like to be Makaya Mashtar, you certify it. So they certified Masha Kiblu Kvar, that which they had already accepted. So Taisva says here that why did they have to wait till the Me'ach HaShverish for this? There would seem many points in history that we were makabel the Torah after Har Sinai. Says while the Omer ben Adoram shekoros bris Moshe brisim Yisrael al Torah v'amitzvus bish biyam al kach, right? Narvus Moyev, there was a bris. So Moshe Rabbeinu made a bris, not the bris of Sinai. So that there was nobody yisyasu besach the Zohar at that point. Over Perik Elo Nemoram, there's a Chazal shekiblu as kol Torah b'har grisim u'var ilo, that we were makabel the Torah again when we crossed into Eretz Yisrael, right at the beginning of at the inception of our life in Eretz Yisrael, we stood on Har Grizim and are able to be Mekayim the Torah, or accepted to be Mekayim the Torah. So why did the Shah Rabba wait? And what happened in Moshe Rabbeinu's time, and what happened in the door of Yeshua? So Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the Alpia Dibur Hoya, Barik Bal Korchom, both of those took place with Be'etzivu Yashem. So if the Rebbe Shalom is Mitzava, there's an element of Bal Korcho to that too. You know, what are you going to tell the Rebbe Shalom though? Not so easy. Avu B'me'ach HaShverish, the Rebbe Shalom didn't give any command what we have to do. Kiblu B'dayt N'me'avas Anas. They accepted upon themselves because of the appreciation of the nest that, for which they were saved. The Rebbe Shalom did not demand of us that we do anything. The Rebbe Shalom saved us. So, the person saved my life. So if I'm a mensch, I feel a koras atoiv to him. If I feel a koras atoiv, so then I'll want to do something that he wants me to do. That's a normal feeling. But that stemmed from within ourselves, not externally. So he said, after the time of Achashverosh, so we don't even have a pishon peh, we don't even have a small excuse. The shaila is, why am I obligated by the bris that Moshe Rabbeinu made in Har Sinai? You know, my great-great-great-great-grandfather, 120 generations of so back, was there. So he was obligated. So what does it have to do with me? What does it have to do with me? I wasn't there. So where did I sign on the dotted line? My grandfather signed the contract with his boss. I have to live with it. So just told it me. So Chazal tell us that all the neshamas also participated in Kabbalah Satara. So we signed on the dotted line. But that Kabbalah was flawed. Because Kof Aleim Harkigis. So where was the flaw rectified? The Me'ach HaShverosh. We were Kabbalah Torah again upon ourselves. But Chazal don't tell us that all the neshamas came to Shushan. So I'll ask you, so I still have a teretz. The guys that were in Shushan, they're stuck. Because how the kiblu? But I wasn't in Shushan, so I'm not stuck. So still Mekan Mador Rabba Lareis. So, yeah. In reality, is it an excuse? No, the Rebbe Rishon won't accept the excuse. But the problem is, within ourselves, we feel that there's a level of excuse. And that is a dangerous thing in life. Rav Noach Weinberg, Olav HaShalom, put it this way. I once went many, many, many years ago, where he did a man in Eretz Yisrael, and made a vote. And it took place in Aish, I think it was in the era Atika. And I went to the vote. So Rav Noach, Olav HaShalom, spoke. So he related the following story. He says, I had a Talmud in Virginia, West Virginia, and he owned a nursing home. So it was a trade for nursing home, whatever the propriety of Noach was or whatever he did. But one fine day, this 95-year-old lady shows up. And she's a Jewish lady. So he refused to give a treif. He's not feeding treif to a Jew. There's no way in the world. It's the one and only Jew in the whole place. And he's not feeding a treif. And she says she wants the treif. And he said, I'm not giving it to you. So she went to the state of Virginia. She sued him for discrimination. And of course she won the case. It was a violation of her rights. So Rav Noach said, so what did you do? He says, Rabbi, I didn't give a treif. He said, so what did you do? He says, I made her into a Baal Tshuva, Baalas Tshuva. He said, how did you make a 95-year-old lady into a Baalas Tshuva? He says, Rabbi, when you got to get something done, you get it done in this world. You know? And that's, you know, when we feel, when we're absolutely certain that we don't have any excuses, so then we'll take the Rabbanu Shalom's Torah the way we have to. But as long as we have in the back of our head that we have a shtickle teretz, you know, it's without the most solid footing. So we need to be mekabel the Torah b'chol dor v'dor and b'chol shono b'shono on Shavuos. Kabbalah Siddur is not so easy. So it's not. So we're mekabel undo each year. Hopefully a little bit more strongly than before. But that chelek of hoda kibluah v'me'ach hashverosh, that is the part that's missing for us, because all the neshamas didn't come to Shushan. So we have to be mekabel that b'chol dor v'dor. Oh, it's interesting that the venue for this Kabbalah Sator wasn't Bovel. The pshat is b'chor that we sinned, or we were sent into Golos because we didn't fulfill the Torah. So apparently it's Tanai Kodal the Maisa to go back into Eretz Yisrael. We met a new Kabbalah Satara, which surpassed the initial Kabbalah Satara. Right? And this is at the very dawn of the Second Jewish Commonwealth. So at that moment, the same way that we were Kabbalah Satara at Sinai and Arvas Mayav, as we were about to enter Eretz Yisrael, for the second time and build the Migdash, it was also a Kabbalah Satara. Which takes place. This is, in a significant sense, the Kabbalah Satara that we need. Kabbalah Satara is significant not only in, as we talked before, commitment to learn, but it's in the overall sense of Kabbalah Satara. We need to come to Shavuos, which is the time which is Mesugal, which is preordained, to be able to be Mekabal, the Rebbeinu Shalom's Torah, to make our own personal Kabbalah Satara. It's not enough all the Kabbalahs which came before us, but we need our own element of Kabbalah Satara. Hold the Kiblu B'me'ach HaShverosh, and that remains for us the Chol Dor V'Dor. Date myself. Oh, Baruch Hashem, there's at least somebody from the Yekis here. They'll know what I'm talking about. If I did this elsewhere, probably nobody would know what I'm talking about. If I'm going to talk about a sefer which is called Tikkun Leil Shavuos, you know, in today's world, almost nobody knows what it is. What is it? Right? I don't think in this basic message you can find a single copy of it. But Tikkun Leil Shavuos. In my youth, people still did Tikkun Leil Shavuos. I recall in East New York doing it. I recall one Shavuos I was in Harrisburg by my uncle, Olav HaShalom. You know, Tikkun Leil Shavuos. The Tikkun Leil Shavuos was a sefer. It must be a pretty ancient sefer from what I gather. And it had the collection, selected readings from the Chumash, from the Vim, from Ksuvim. Eliyahu the Psayeka, he knows what I'm talking about. He knows the old-time religion, you know. The Messiah of Midori Doris, the way it was, you know. You want to know how the religion was run, what it was built on, you go to the Yekis, you'll see straight from the Maril to us, you know, the way they, you know, unchanged what the religion was about. The Messiah in its most pristine form. And after that, you go, they have selected readings from Mishnah, from Gemara, from Zohar, all types of things. The Yekis probably don't have the Zohar part in there, you know. But I think the rest of us have the Zohar part, you know. But selected readings. So this was the normal sefer which was used on Leil Shavuos. So the Dubna Magid, right, circa 18th century. The Dubna Magid did what we did. The Dubna Magid used to sit and learn Gemara on the night of Shavuos. So they came to him and said, Reb, you know, the Tikkun was still very much in vogue in his day. So how come you don't follow the minhag of all the Yidden that you do of the doing the Tikkun and you sit and learn? So the Dubna Magid was blessed with the ability to make Mashalom. And what's interesting about his Mashalom, despite the fact that we're, you know, going on 3 centuries since the Dubna Magid, and the world has changed, the technology has changed, but his Mashalom still ring true. You know, they cut it, you know, and where we're holding in the world today, they still resound. So he says, let me explain it to you, he says. You know, there was a pauper in a town in Europe, and he couldn't earn a living. So he decided, listen, this poverty is terrible. So he has to find a profession for himself, something, some business that he could do to earn a living. So he looked around, what business could he do? So there was a textile dealer in his town, a wealthy textile dealer. And he looked over, says, this guy looks like a Malocha Kalin Akia. He has, you know, a bunch of sample books. He goes around and he shows people the sample books and they're throwing money at him. He says, I could do that. That's not back-breaking work. You know, I'm physically up to it. And it's, you know, I could, you know, go into that business. So he went into the business and he goes around and nobody orders from him. So a while goes by and he can't figure it out. So he goes back and he asks some guy. He says, I don't get it. He says, you know, Schmerl down the block, he's a millionaire. You know, he can't keep up with it. They throw so much money at him. And me, I can't get a single order. What's the pshat? He says, listen. He says, don't be a fool. He says, Schmerl has his sample books, you're right. But Schmerl has 5 big warehouses of textiles behind those sample books, and everyone knows it. So when Schmerl shows up and you want, you know, 100 yards of this cloth, 1,000 yards of that cloth, they know that tomorrow will be delivered from his warehouse, so they're doing business with him. But you don't have a warehouse, so why should anyone in the world do business with you? What are you selling? He says, the same is true. He says, Amoli says, in the Doris, they learn properly the whole year. It came at the end of the year. So listen, they couldn't show everything that they learned in the year. It's too much. So the night of Shavuos, they took out some samples. There's a little bit of the Chumash that we learned, a little Novi, a little Ksuvim, a little Mishnayos, a little Gemara, and a Zevaita. These are samples, a dogma of what we did. So that was fine. Yeah. He says, but I don't want to be like that pauper. He says, a whole year I didn't learn. What am I going to do? Show the Rebbeinu Shel Olam samples? And there's no warehouse behind it? He says, what's the point of that? He says, I might as well just take out a Gemara and learn. This was the Dubna Magid. And as the Kabbalah Satorah cannot be theoretical. And it needs to be focused on things that are very, very concrete. You know, we have to think through concretely what we're able to do, and we have to start to do them. Both Chachmei HaMusar and Chachmei HaChassidus coming from 2 different standpoints, but they both reach the same conclusion. And that is that when a person feels inspiration, so he has to be mekabel upon himself something concrete. And if he doesn't, then it's a very negative happening in his life. Right? The Chachmei HaMusar, Chachmei HaChassidus, how to apply Kabbalah, why it is that way, Chachmei HaMusar, had a practical approach. What is our obligation to serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam? It's consistent with our abilities. When I'm inspired, I have new abilities that I didn't have before. So, if I act upon those abilities, so the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is happy. If the Rabbeinu Shel Olam gave me the opportunity, and I didn't take the opportunity, then how do you want him to act? How did the Chofetz Chaim Zatzal put it? He put it this way. He says, a man needs $10,000 or something. He has to marry his daughter, or he needs to borrow $10,000. Comes to shul, and he meets a gvir, a wealthy man at shul. So he says, Yankel, he says, you know, I need a gemach. Can I come see you? He says, yeah. He says, come, I'm in the office, I'm not busy, 8:30 this morning, come and I'll take care of it for you. Comes 8:30, the guy that needs the gemach doesn't show up, the whole day passes, he doesn't show up. Comes to shul tomorrow, and he says, Yankel, he says, can I come today? He says, yeah, come 8:30. The day passes by again. Day after day, month after month, he keeps meeting him at shul. And he keeps asking him, listen, I need a gemach of $10,000, and he doesn't show up. He says, so at what point, he says, do you think that the uncle's patience is going to wear thin? He says, listen, I have time to help people, but not for a nudnik. You know, every day you come and you ask me, you know, you need a gemach. Listen, I'm about chesed, so I told you, I'll give it to you. I made no problem for you. I said, come to my office, whatever, have it there, whatever, and I'll give you $10,000. There's a loan. Right? Home for months, every single day you come over and you ask me and I tell you to come and you don't show up. He says, no. So what do you want? He says, you know, for a nudnik, I don't have time. You just waste my time. I don't have time for you. You know, you're serious about what you want. Good, I'm perfectly willing to help you. So the Chofetz Chaim said that we have to be careful not to be that nudnik. He says, we get up in the morning and we say, tell the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, same with the Meir, the Hovi, the Lahaski, the Shmoya, the Lidmoy, the Lodame, the Lishma, the Lassus, and the Kayim. No? So you ask the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, I need Siyata Dishmaya, please help me to learn. No? Okay. So the Rabbeinu Shel Olam says, so I told you, show up in the Meis Medrash and I'll help you. Started the day, ended the day, you didn't show up. Came back tomorrow, the same with the Bible, the Hovin, the Ask, the Shmoya, the Way, the Lam, the Nishma, the Ask, the Kayak. Rashulam says, fine, comes tomorrow, right here, out there. He says, how many days do you want to pull this on the Rabbeinu Shel Olam? He says, we come to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, we ask for Siyata Dishmaya, we should succeed. And the Rabbeinu Shel Olam says, yes, he consents. Harachav Pichavon, Aleu, the Gemara says in Brochus Daf Nun, that when we ask in Ruchnius for Dvar Torah, as much as we're willing to accept, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is willing to give. He says, well, we have to show up. His Rabbi said, a Kabbalah Satorah is to accept upon ourselves, to have a goal that's realistic for ourselves in our life circumstances, and follow through. To be a tremendous, tremendous action to follow through. A tremendous action. I'll end with Rabbi Chodesh. Zatzal, the long term Mashiach HaChevron Yeshiva. Apparently, at the end of his life, you know, after his Rebbetzin, Tzivya, the Shalom, was Nifter also, he lived in a room with the Bochum, in an apartment. He was very old. So they say he went to a chasana one night, he was, I don't know, 85, close to 90 years old, came back at 1 in the morning or so, and he sat down to learn. So they said, Rebbe, what in the world are you doing? 1 o'clock in the morning, you went to a chasana, you traveled, you were exhausted, you came back. Well, you know, at your age, go to sleep. It's time to go to sleep. He says, I can't go to sleep. Why can't I go to sleep? He says, I have a Kabbalah to learn a certain amount every day. He says, no. So under the circumstances, so learn tomorrow. Tomorrow, make up for it. So Rabbi Chodesh, the great Bal Musa, said, it doesn't go that way. If I give in to do it tomorrow, that's the destruction of all my storm. The Seder is to do it today. That's my Kabbalah. There's a rov I know in the Midwest. He has a Kabbalah to do 2 hours Kavei Kviyas Itim the Torah every day before Shkiyas Achama. And it doesn't make a difference how long he was up. If he was up for 24 hours before, it's only if he's on the highway and it's 2 hours to Shkia, he pulls off the highway on the shoulder, he takes out a safer and learns for the next 2 hours. One has to be an action. We have to be really very, very stubborn to succeed. We should be zeicha to be mekabel the Rabbeinu Shel Olam to Torah.
Yeah.
You warm up.